Welcome to Small Biz Indie. I'm your host, Ryan Henry. Today, my guest is Indianapolis area business legend, Danny O'Malley of the O'Malley family. How are you doing today?
Pretty good, Ryan. Very good. How are you?
I'm doing very well.
Excellent.
So, Danny is the owner of Indy's Trusted Servant, an agency here in Indianapolis that helps businesses provide exceptional customer service. So, Danny, would you like to tell us a little bit about what exactly service or, and good customer service can mean to the success of a business?
Well, of course, in my opinion, long term, it means everything, okay? And I might mention that what I do is keynote speaking about customer service. If you have an event, you need a keynote speaker. I'm entertaining and got a world of history in customer service. But and I do customer service training for companies as well. But it's really all about culture of the organization, and the culture of the organization is going to determine the level of service. And what happens a lot is that businesses are successful because they're built on good service and have a good culture, but after a period of time, sometimes they lose that. And I try to help businesses make sure, well, they build a good culture, keep a good culture, and don't lose that good culture. Businesses get bought out. Sometimes that affects the culture. Businesses get bigger and they forget what got them there. That affects the culture. And lots of other things. Maybe the businesses aren't as careful about who they hire and bring into their culture. All kinds of factors go into customer service, but really it comes down to culture, and that comes down to if you're going to talk the talk as an owner, you got to walk the walk.
Excellent. And so, Danny, I know you mentioned culture there, and I've heard you talk a number of times over the last couple of years. One of the things you really talked about was the culture that your father Joe built up with O'Malley Food Markets. So how important was that culture to the success of the business?
It was really, really everything. I mean, my dad started on a wing and a prayer, you know, with a loan from a bank and a second mortgage on his house. He had worked very successfully and helped another grocery chain build a culture earlier. And one of the things that I love to talk about is my dad's first employee, the company he worked for had a store at 71st and Keystone where Sullivan Hardware is now. And my dad and his partner bought that store in 1962, and my dad built that business from $6,000 a week sales to $50,000 a week sale in 1 year, and he did it on customer service and he did it on culture. His produce manager was a guy named Danny Barton, who passed away, unfortunately, a couple of years ago. But Danny lived where Emerson and 70 cross in today's Indianapolis, and he was driving to 71st and Keystone every day to be the produce manager. When my dad announced he was going to open a store at 106th and College in 1966, Danny Barton came to him and said, "I'm really working for you, not your partner. And I want to come up to the store where you're going to be at 106th and College." And my dad said, "Danny, you're going to have to drive twice as far both ways, 6 days a week to do that." And he goes, "I don't care, Joe, I'm working for you." Well, that's the beginning of a great culture.
And so, Danny, in part of building the culture, you've mentioned before that empowering your employees to make some of the frontline decisions is important to building that culture. Is that right?
That's right.
And so what would be a great example of empowering your employees to be able to make frontline decisions?
Well, I've got millions of them. I've got some O'Malley ones, but I'll jump to a Nordstrom one, okay? Everybody knows about Nordstrom and their seemingly endless customer service, even though, you know, they're a big national company with stores everywhere, large stores. This happened at a Nordstrom store, and I'm not sure where it was, but a guy ran into a Nordstrom store at about 5:30 one night, and he was really in a hurry, and he went to the perfume counter, and he asked for a particular kind of perfume, and he told the girl it was really important because it was his anniversary, and he was meeting his wife for dinner in an hour, and he hadn't done anything yet.
Oh, no.
Unfortunately, Nordstrom didn't carry that type of perfume, but the girl said, "Sir, you're going to be in the shopping center for another 20 minutes. Oh, yeah, I got to go to the candy store and the flower store. She goes, "If you'll come back here in 20 minutes, I'll have it for you." At which point, he left the store, and she got the girl at the next counter to watch her counter. That's empowerment. That's teamwork. And she ran down the mall to the Macy's store where she knew they had that kind of perfume. bought the perfume, brought it back to the store, wrapped it, had it waiting for him when he came in sweating with the flowers and the candy. And that's him. That's teamwork, which is another of my, you know, real big themes. And that's empowerment. Both girls were empowered to leave the station. One girl was empowered to go buy from a competitor and leave the store. And I've seen a million examples where that doesn't happen anymore in a lot of places, but it happens in some that keep their great cultures.
And so even though it was making a purchase from a competing store, it still kept that customer loyal to the business that empowered the employee.
And here's the other point. The harried businessman who came into the store at 5:30 that night, an hour before his anniversary dinner, didn't go to Macy's. He went to Nordstrom's because he knew somehow or other Nordstrom would bail him out. That's what I call being, we just passed the Indy 500. That's what I call being in the pole position. That's where you want to be. Ryan Henry wants to be in the pole position with his business and his clients. And that's where every business wants to be. But it takes a great culture and it takes an awful lot of effort to get there and stay there.
And so, Danny, what are some of the things a business can do to maintain its culture and to continue to empower their employees as they expand?
The first important thing is to make sure in your hiring, you hire people that'll fit the culture. And that takes a lot of effort. And sometimes businesses are busy and they need people behind that cash register or on that sales floor or whatever it is, on that assembly line, and they don't pay enough attention to who they're hiring. The second thing you do is training people properly. And that includes inculcating them into the culture, letting them know the history of the company. In the case of O'Malley, is how Joe O'Malley started and how much of a gamble he took to open the first store and how he actually made less money when he started in the grocery business than everybody else that's sitting there new at O'Malley's, and all of that stuff, and what some of their responsibilities are, teamwork, customer service, and so on and so forth. And I have a slide in my PowerPoint presentation, CFO to CEO, what if we train them and they leave? CEO says, what if we don't train them and they stay?
I guess that's a really good point to make.
It's a good point to make.
What would be a good way to address a complaint when you do have an unhappy customer? How would a business with good culture address those complaints?
Well, of course, it depends. The first thing is to answer the complaint as quickly and expeditiously as possible, whether it's a phone call, a text, an email, a snail mail, or if it's on the floor of the business. In the case of usually retail, I suspect, it needs to be handled expeditiously. Ideally, it needs to be handled by the first person that the complaining customer talks to. Sometimes that's not possible. Sometimes that employee might not be trained enough or have enough responsibility to take care of a complaint. But ideally, as many employees as possible can take care of a complaint. So I think you're leading me to the story about when my dad put me in charge of handling complaints, and he made me write down a list of 11 steps to handling complaints, and one of the steps at the beginning was return all calls unbelievably fast. And in this meeting in 1975, he said, I'm not saying as soon as possible, I'm saying unbelievably fast. That's got to be your highest priority. He said, in fact, if you're in the office, you're not in a meeting, and you're not already on the phone, then take the call right then and there. That blows people away right there. Your name's on the door. You took the call. Failing that, let's say you come back from visiting three stores and there are three messages. One message says from your wife, doesn't say one of the little girls fell off the slide and broke her arm. Next message is from one of your insane Xavier buddies about going to a basketball game in Cincinnati tonight. And the third message is from a lady you never heard of. Which one are you returning first? And I said, rhetorical question, right? He goes, yeah, she might have a complaint. She might have a compliment. She might be asking for a donation. She might live in Shelbyville and we don't have a store there, so we can't donate. But you call her and you tell her, okay, or him. And the same applies, of course, to emails and, you know, texts and whatever we're doing to communicate today. Back then, it was known after a time that I was the guy handling the complaints at O'Malley's people in the stores willingly gave my name and phone number to customers if they couldn't handle it at the store. And I got quite a few phone calls. I got a lot of letters too. And you just respond as quickly as possible. The next step is listening and active listening. And believe it or not, you can even actively listen on the phone. And you can interject, "I see," and, you know, continue and go on as the customer tells their story so that they know you are listening. And then another big important part is the proper follow-up. And the follow-up is really, really, really important. You can make a customer, when you do these things, make a customer like your company better than he or she liked it before you messed up or before they think you messed up. Because not every customer is right all the time, but you've got to start with that idea. There's a famous grocery store in Connecticut called Stu Leonard's, and there's a big boulder in the parking lot, and chiseled into the boulder is, there are two rules at Stu Leonard's. Rule number one, the customer's always right. Rule number two, when the customer is wrong, reread rule number one. And that's how you have to kind of look at it, whether the customer is right or wrong. So the follow-up is really important. It might be as simple as, let's say the customer called to tell you you've been out of cornflakes for a week. Well, you're going to call the store manager and you're going to say, did somebody not order the cornflakes? Did the supplier not bring the cornflakes? Let's get that solved first. Then you're going to call the lady back, even though you've been in the store 2 weeks later and you've seen the cornflakes, and said, have we had cornflakes the last two times you've been in the store? Okay. Has the bathroom been as clean as you like it the last two times, even though you've been in the store to check that they're cleaning it that much? You want to make sure, and if it's a little more difficult than that, like a situation in the meat department, you know, has it been good the last couple of times? Just checking. People love that. And they love it even more today than they did when I was doing it, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, because nobody does it anymore. Everything is very impersonal today. And so I'm tempted to mention a book that was really popular with business people in the 80s called Megatrends. And it was all Rust Belt to the Sun Belt. And one of the things was high tech versus high touch. Basically what they said in the mid 80s is, for every automated teller people are going to deal with, they're going to want to talk to a person more, even more than they do today. And that's become true, right?
And so that really has become the case today, especially with phone systems when you call and it's
absolutely
press zero.
The phone trees are terrible. Now there are good phone trees and bad phone trees too. You know, I've called places and it became really apparent what I got to do pretty quick. You know, and then I've been places where you're going to get bounced around like a ping pong ball. And one of the things about handling the complaints too is, it's always good if the same person can sort of handle the complaint all the way through. That's part of follow-up. But when you have to kick a person upstairs, well, first of all, the customer has to start all over. And secondly, that there's a delay in the system. So the idea is, empower as many people as you can to handle the complaints on the front line. And everybody works together as a team. Nobody gets in trouble. We're all trying to take care of the customer, right? So just because you forgot to order the cornflakes, I'm not going to kill you. Now, if you forget to order the cornflakes 4 weeks in a row, I might kill you, right? Or you don't clean the bathroom 4 weeks in a row, I might kill you. But right now, we're just working to take care of the customer, right? And now that the guy in the store, the gal in the store, knows what he or she's got to do in the future. And they know you're going to check. But it's still a teamwork. You know, my dad used to say, you know, I had a clipboard and I'd mark certain things down. They have the right displays up and is everybody dressed right? And he'd say, whatever you do with those reports, find somebody doing something right too. We're all on the team together.
And so it sounds like complaints are actually an opportunity to make sure your staff understand the level of service that you want each and every customer to experience.
And that the customer knows you are concerned about them. My dad said, it's an opportunity to make lemonade out of lemons. Abraham Lincoln put it this way, best way to handle an enemy is to make him into a friend.
Absolutely. So Danny, would you say that technology empowers businesses in any way to provide good customer service in 2019?
It can, in certain instances, but it's relied on too much. One of my favorite customer or client slogans is OSIP Optometry. They have a sign that hangs in each of their stores, and it says, "Laser technology from Mars, customer service from Mayberry." And the important thing to note is, who sees that every day? Their employees. They know that customer service from Mayberry is important to the company and the customers. They're reminded of it every day.
And so that's an opportunity for them to understand, even with technology, the customer is what really makes it.
We got to have the technology, but we got to have the customer service from Mayberry with it. And that's culture, too. That's part of the culture, too.
And so, Danny, what would you say to anyone running a business today? What's the most important thing that they should understand when it comes to hiring a good team and getting culture and providing good service?
Well, one of my dad's big culture statement was, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And you might start with that in hiring people. Obviously, you can run all the diagnostics tests, run people through drug tests, which disqualifies a lot of people, as we know today. But you also have to try to test how that person might work in your situation. I remember back in 1982, we were opening two stores in 1 year, which we had never done before. So we needed to do a lot more hiring than we normally did. And we had a kind of about 4 or 5 days before each, no, about 2 weeks before each store, each of the two stores opened, we had open interviews to try and, you know, get people, and we had advertised in the paper and people came in. And I remember a particular butcher who I interviewed, who wanted a job with us and had all the background, you know, stuff there. But he said a couple of things during, and I knew technically the guy was going to be very good, but I could tell also that he wasn't really going to work as a team. And he really didn't care too much about customers. He didn't even know he was showing that face to me. I didn't think we could change the guy. So even though we needed X number of butchers at the time, I decided, no, we'll bring a young guy from another store if we have to, who maybe still got to learn a little more about cutting meat, but he knows customer service. We can teach him how to cut meat. But we can't take a 45-year-old person that doesn't want to do customer service and work as a team and change that person.
So skills can be gained, but the ability to deal with people and provide good service is something that's much harder to find?
It's harder to find. It probably harder to find today than it was back when we were doing it, I would guess. And technology might play a role in that. So many people are on their device all the time rather than talking to each other. That's a definite disadvantage to people that are trying to, you know, but it's done. Look at Chick-fil-A. When's the last time you went into Chick-fil-A and found a disinterested employee? You don't. So it can be done.
So even at a large scale.
Even on a large scale, yep.
So Danny, what advice would you have for someone today who is considering starting their own business or is in the process of starting their own business? What steps can they take as part of that process to identify the best possible members for their team?
I think the best steps they can take is to talk to the person and interview the person, if you will. Now, you know, you're going to have them fill out a job application. You're going to see, you might even check to see if they're telling the truth about being a butcher 20 years ago and so on and so forth. But the most important thing to do is to talk to the person and see if they'll be a Danny Barton but wants to drive twice as far from home every day to work for you, or they're going to be like that butcher that I interviewed in 1982. And hire the Danny Bartons and don't hire the butcher.
Oh, and speaking of hiring great people, you are available to come in and talk to businesses and to train teams, are you not?
Sure, absolutely.
And so what does that look like? When someone contacts you and says, Danny, I want you to come and talk to my employees, what's the next step that you take?
Well, there's two different programs that I do. One is a keynote speech, okay? But I'll give you an example of a client I'm working with right now. I did a keynote speech last month at the Damar Centers for their top, I'd say, 85 to 90 people. The Damar Centers, their main campus is out by the airport, and they minister to people that are somewhat learning disabled. The main thing is autism. And they're much bigger than anybody thinks. They've got hundreds of employees, and they've got 7 or 8 locations around the metro area, with the main one being out at the airport. I did a keynote speech for them. From that, they had their department heads there, and two of the department heads came to me afterwards and said, we'd like you to do the keynote for our employees at the Damar, but one of them who deals with a bigger number of employees, said, and I want you to do your 4-hour customer service program for my employees. So it can be a keynote speech. It can be 4 hours of training, which you obviously wouldn't do all at one time. And I've got clients that want to do an hour once a month or an hour once a quarter, you know, so that they can work on things in between sessions and we can talk in between sessions. And then once in a while, I'll have somebody that simply wants to sit with me one-on-one and have me do, consulting with them.
So you're available to work with small business owners as well.
My smallest client had 7 employees at the time at Revolution Eyes, an optometrist up in Carmel. And my biggest client, numbers-wise, was probably the 500 people that work at Conseco Fieldhouse.
Oh, wow.
Which was a kick. You know, I'm a big sports fan, and I'm an original Pacers season ticket holder. And this was the year they had the lockout 6 or 7 years ago. And I was talking to these 550 employees, including, you know, ticket takers and security people and ushers and maintenance guys and stuff. And they filled a middle section of the lower bowl, and my PowerPoint was on the center point court scoreboard.
Oh, wow.
That was cool.
That had to be an experience.
So that was probably the biggest crowd I've spoken to.
Wow. And so, Danny, before we wrap up today, what's one piece of advice that you would offer to anyone who is starting their own business?
Well, you know, not knowing what business you're starting, of course, you might be a one-man show like I am now, okay? So teamwork might not be part of your issue. If you're trying to build something, or you're starting something like my dad did back in 1966, where you got to find 30 people to run a small grocery store, I think the main thing is to remember, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. You're the main guy, and you're going to be the person that spreads your, you know, wings out to the rest of those people. And that's how they're going to treat one another, and that's the teamwork. That's how they're going to treat the customers. That's probably the main thing, and along with that, it's if you're going to talk the talk, you're going to walk the walk. Do we have time to do the parking story?
Absolutely.
So this is a staple. My dad at some point said, he was always saying, you know, you might say to me, why is he telling me this? I already know this, but I don't know you know it unless I tell you. So he says to me, if you park as far from the front door of a store as you can when you visit, and I do it, then it'll become part of who we are. This is his way back in the 70s of saying, culture. We didn't have the term culture back then as it applied to a business. And we won't have to make another rule. Our employees will just do it, and it becomes part of who we are. So you're walking the walk and talking the talk. He went on and said, not only that, when you come back in the store, if there's trash in the parking lot, pick it up. If you do that, all the carryout boys will pick up the trash, and so on and so forth. And he said, and I watched as the years went by at that, and it worked. So I use it in my programs to talk about building a culture from the ground up and walking the walk and talking the talk. One of the jobs my dad gave me back in 75 was public speaking. He was getting requests from sororities and small rotary clubs and so on and so forth to speak, and he wanted me to do it. You're a former English teacher. You know how I run my stores. I don't want to do this. And that became a speech on how to be a smart grocery shopper. And it became a very popular. I probably did 50 or so of those a year around town with various organizations. This was 1975 it started. By about 88 or 89, I get a call from a guy who says, well, I'm Ryan Henry, and I'm the new manager of the Ayers store in Glendale. For those of you who are uninitiated, Ayers became Lazarus and Lazarus became Macy's. But back then it was still L.S. Ayers. He says, I just got here to this store. There's something wrong with the service. My wife heard you give your smart grocery shopper speech. She said you were entertaining, energetic, and knowledgeable. And I was wondering if you could come down and speak to my employees about customer service and how O'Malley's does it. I said, gee, I've never done that before, but I'll give it a shot. Not knowing I might do this for a living many, many years later, some 30 years later. I said, how many employees do you have? And he said, about 75. He said, we have a monthly staff meeting at 7 a.m. on the first Monday of the month, and the shopping center opens at 9. Could you come at 7:30 and pop in, and I'll introduce you, and you can tell them how O'Malley's does it. And when I got there, the first 75 spaces were already taken.
Oh, no.
Which I knew the people I was talking to was taking up the customers' parking spaces. So that's one of the things I told them is, you can't park there. You got to park out there at 62nd Street inside the parking lot, but away from the front door. Those are for your customers. And I swear I would drive down to our downtown O'Malley's or out to our 56 and Fall Creek O'Malley's. If I got within 5 blocks of Glendale after that speech, I would stop, detour, go check, and they were parking out. But that's not the end of the story. The end of the story is about 5 years ago, I'm talking to a branch bank manager of a bank in Lawrence, and I tell him that story. He says, you say this was 88 or 89? Yeah. Well, that's strange. I worked there in 80, 81, 82 as a high school student, and we were parking out. Point being, they had the culture right on parking, but they lost it. Somebody didn't keep an eye out in that intervening time. And so you can't let your culture slide. You got to keep improving the culture, especially as you get bigger and it gets harder and harder to know all the folks. And so the Nordstrom's and Chick-fil-A's, and I'll say Southwest Airlines, and I like Outback Steakhouse too. They've managed to seemingly have pretty happy employees that really take care of you no matter how big they get. Many, many places, most notably around here lately, Marsh, H.H. Gregg, real recently, Steak and Shake, they've gone. Steak and Shake appears to be going anyway. We'll see. But everybody I know, and I've got grandkids, and they love Steak and Shake. But the service at Steak and Shake has slid in the last 5 or 6 years. Everybody agrees with that. That's part of the reason. That might not be the only reason. But so keeping that culture is not, you just don't build it and then stop with it. You got to keep working it.
Awesome. So, Danny, how would someone get in touch with you if they wanted to learn more or hire you to come and talk to them?
Well, great question. My website is www.indystrustedservant.com. That's INDYS, trustedservant.com. My email is DannyOmalia@gmail.com. O-M-A-L-I-A. No caps, no apostrophes. And my phone number is 317-413-9062. Thanks for asking. I never would have thought of that.
Well, Danny, thank you so much for joining us today. And everyone, thank you for listening. Catch us on our next episode of Small Biz Indie coming soon. Find everything for your business in our Small Biz Marketplace. Visit henrymg.com/marketplace and save 10% off your first order with promo code SmallBizIndy. This podcast is produced by Henry Marketing Group of Indianapolis, Indiana. Get new episodes automatically on your preferred listening device by subscribing to Small Biz Indy in iTunes, Google, or on our website, henrymg.com/smallbizindy. For information on today's guest or to be a guest on Small Biz Indy, send us an email, info@henrymg.com.